Hello, friends. Welcome to the Neighborhood Church Podcast. You can go to neighborhoodchurchmn.org to get more information on how you can get even better connected. Have a good and beautiful day. Enjoy.
My name is Nita Davis, and I am so nervous and excited to be here. Yes, thank you, thank you, thank you. This is something that I've been kind of feeling like God's asked me to do for a long time, and then it's now working out. I've been a part of this community since 2015 when we church planted, and it's just such a privilege to be up here in front of you today. I was asked to share my story and my journey with Jesus, as well as what I've been continually working on and pressing into in the last 2 years. I never really had like this aha moment with God. I don't even really recall when it was that Jesus came into my life, but I know that there's always been these things that he's drawn me into. I recall back when I was like 8, 9 years old, my parents had just divorced, and we were living over in Michigan at the time, and so we moved back to Duluth, and my mom was a single parent of 3 kids, and she was not educated, and so she had a really tough road ahead of her. We were living in this small, small house in Woodland, and her neighbor across the street was an older lady who loved Jesus and invited her over for Bible studies, and then eventually invited us into her church community. And it was a Baptist church down in Chester Park, right next or across the street from Ski Hut. And I remember walking into that little Baptist church and feeling something different. Being in the basement and going to Sunday school, being a part of, I think it was a Christmas play, but I was dressed up like a ladybug. And my brothers drawing pictures when they were in Sunday school of Jesus dying on the cross, and my one brother crying, not understanding why he had to die. Why did he have to die? So my next memory of Jesus drawing me in is we moved up to Two Harbors. Because again, my mother was a single mom, and so we moved into some low-income housing up there, and we didn't really go to church after that. But I remember sitting in my living room on Sunday mornings, because back then, you guys, we didn't have cable where we could watch whatever we wanted. We had to watch what was on TV, and usually it was Sunday morning, it was going to be church. And I remember the Hour of Power. You remember that big, huge, yes, 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 with the big, huge stained glass windows and the pretty robes that the pastor would wear, and his voice was always so soft and so calming. And then I also remember another TV show, The Lowell Lundstrom Ministries. Does anybody remember that one? Yeah. All right. So at the end of the show, they would always have these callers calling in to get prayer, and I remember when these people would call in, they were then asking them if they wanted Jesus to be a part of their life. And I remember sitting there as a kid, I had to have been like 9, 10 years old, thinking, yes, this is what I want. This is what I want. I want him to be a part of my life. But I didn't understand that you only had to ask the one and done, right? So every time I saw this show, I was constantly asking Jesus into my life because I wanted to feel what it is that I was feeling when I would watch this TV program. I was also a part of an organization as I got a little bit older, still in Two Harbors, called Job's Daughters. Anybody know that? Yes. Yes. That was another one of those things that I felt Jesus drawing me into who he was. It was a lot of fun, actually. We did dances. We got to meet boys and dress up and do more dances and more boys. But I also remember we would make pasties for fundraisers. And one of the beautiful things that I really, really enjoyed was being, and we would do the ceremonies. And it was very ritualistic. We would wear a white robe, and a purple rope would be around our waist, and we'd have to walk a certain way and sing certain songs. And that's where I learned the old rugged cross And that's such a beautiful hymn. I absolutely love it. Love it, love it, love it. So after we were living in Two Harbors, my mom met my stepdad, Joe, and she moved us down to Carleton, the best little town, yes, on the face of the planet. Love, love, love Carleton. So we were living as low-income people in Two Harbors, and we moved to Carleton, and now we're super cool. And everybody likes us, and it's me and my brothers, and we're making friends left and right. And I remember one time when I was at the school, and there was a gentleman that showed up, and he had a Gideon Bible, and he was handing them out. Does anybody remember the Gideon Bibles? Just this little tiny Bible, maybe the size of a deck of cards, and all it is the New Testament inside of it. And I remember receiving that Bible, and I remember going home at night, and I would read my Bible every single night. And I remember one time I was reading the story about Peter, who denied Jesus 3 times, and here I am in my little teenage arrogance thinking that I'm like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. So I'm reading this story, and I'm like, Jesus, no way would I ever do this to you. I would never, ever deny you, ever, in a million years. I'm sure I have done that quite a few times since then. So in high school, I ended up meeting my girlfriend, Lori Reed, and she invited me out to this little church in Atkinson, Minnesota. Does anybody know where that's at? Right? If you are going to Elmwood, and you just drive a little bit farther, there is the old Atkinson Church. It was a Lutheran church, and I had a Pastor Phil, who was older gentleman, amazing, had, again, this gentle voice that would just draw you in. And this church was a very small church community. It was filled with just mostly the local people that were living around there. And I was all in. I wanted to just soak up Jesus so much, and the stories that he would tell, and I loved it. I loved the liturgy. I loved the fact that we'd read the Apostles' Creed. I ended up doing catechism. I got myself baptized. I ended up having I ended up being a teenage mother, and so at that time I also brought my son, Cody, with me. I got pregnant when I was 16, had him when I was 17, and so I thought that if I did this, that I was going to be okay as long as I got him baptized, as long as I was baptized, that I would be okay. And so I remember this old little lady sitting in the back of the church, and she wasn't a very happy person, but she always would say to me, Nita, promise me that you will always bring Cody to church. Promise me. And I'm like, okay, I will. And I don't think I really brought him to church very much after that. I'm pretty positive that I didn't, because I do have that personality when somebody tries to tell me to do something, I'm probably not gonna do it. So after high school, I graduated, and then I went up to Bemidji State to become an accountant, to learn how to be an accountant. Go Beavers. Yes. And the beauty of Bemidji State was that this university was the first public university in the United States to offer single-parent housing on campus. So it was one of those deals that I was just super blessed. Jim Erickson at the time was the athletic director, and he was the counselor, and so he hooked me up because he's also an alumni from Bemidji, and I was able to go to college and get my accounting degree. And I teased my son Cody, who's now 30, and he works for the forestry, for the DNR, and I say, oh yeah, you've gone to college twice, buddy. You've gone twice. So while I was in college, living in these single-parent housing, there's older women who become kind of mentors for you. And so we started up a Bible study, and I remember going to a Bible study, and I had a girlfriend, her name was Zee, and she was a very lively, loved Jesus woman, and she invited me to conferences. So we'd go down to Brainerd, and then one time she invited me to an event at her church up there, and I wasn't sure what this was all going to entail, but it was a Pentecostal church, and this event was an event where I was sitting in the crowd just like you guys are, and the guy who's leading the event says, I am going to gift you with being able to speak in tongues. Why don't you come up here? Now, I am like 19 years old, and I just want to be clear that I do believe that being able to speak in tongues, it is a spiritual gift. I do believe it. However, I wasn't quite sure that I received it that day, because as I came up on the stage, then he calls somebody else up to come right alongside of me to interpret me speaking in tongues. I'm 19. I'm scared out of my mind, and I'm going to try to speak in tongues. And so I'm trying to receive it, and he just kept saying to me, come on, come on, just start talking, just start talking. And before you know it, I just start talking. I didn't know what I was saying, but I was just rambling something. And then the gentleman next to me decided that it was an interpretation of love. And then after I received that gift, I remember later on the pastor's talking about how you need to be really careful, because now that you've got this, the devil's going to get you, and the demons are all lurking around, and they're just watching and waiting for the day that you decide that you're going to mess up, and that you're going to get it. So you better be careful. So I can remember being in my apartment, scared out of my mind, praying over my son, trying to pray over him in these tongues, not sure exactly what it is that I'm doing, and I'm thinking, I am going to mess up. Because in that moment in my life, there was parts of me that I wanted so much to have this relationship with Jesus. But yet there's also parts of me that are like, I kind of want to see what the world's all about. I kind of want to experience these things over here that everybody else keeps experiencing. And I am going to mess up. I'm going to mess up. Holy crap. I can't do this. I am not going to do this. So I decided if I am going to try to follow with Jesus that I'm just afraid that I am going to mess up, then I'm not going to do it. So then I ended up shutting myself out completely from him, did the occasional praying every now and again, and that was about it. I graduate from college, and Cody and I moved down to back to Duluth, and that's where I met my husband, and we had decided to move to Iowa. So we bought a restaurant, we moved down to Iowa, and things went really, really fast. I mean, it was a matter of 4 months, and actually, it was a matter of a month, and we were living in Iowa. So we're down in Iowa. I end up having 3 more children, and I had another girlfriend, again, God drawing me in, she invited me to church. And it was at this church that I actually experienced who Jesus really was and what it was really all about. I was able to learn the Bible. I was able to get involved in Bible studies, but it was in those moments that I learned what grace really meant. And grace is just that beautiful, beautiful word that it's still at times hard to really wrap my brain around it. It really is. It's that unmerited favor. It's that ability to, the power of God sent to us for free, that God's free and unmerited favor with humanity, to be able to wrap my brain around the fact that, you know what, No matter what I did, it didn't matter from this moment on, because Jesus was all about grace, and that it was what he did that then I was able to step into this kingdom of heaven. I was all in. I was so all in. I could not get myself involved enough. I was doing Bible studies, and this is how I am. All in. Bible studies, marriage conferences, events, volunteering for kids stuff. I was all over the map. I loved being in church. I loved it. And yet there was this undercurrent that was constantly sweeping in on me. I really didn't enjoy being at home. It was hard to love up on my kids because they wouldn't listen to me. It was hard to be really all in and with my family. But here I am. I'm living this life where I want God and I want Jesus and I want this relationship so bad. And yet at the same time, I'm feeling that tension at home. And it's like, how can they possibly meet up? How do they possibly reconcile to one another? So my dad, my stepdad, Joe, he had passed away in 2012. And we came up here, and I won't forget it. He was an alcoholic, and he was also diagnosed with cancer at the beginning of 2012. And by August, he'd passed away. And so I will never forget standing in Walmart after he had died, and it's me and my husband standing there in the produce section, and he says to me, I really feel like God is calling us to move back up here. And now, at this point, I had been feeling like God was telling me to wait for something, and I wasn't quite sure what it was yet, but I was in this period of waiting and waiting. And when my husband told me that, I was like, you're crazy. My family lives here. I'm okay with living 6 hours away from my family. I was in relationships that just really needed a lot of work, and I did not want to do this. But we prayed, And I'm a big, big, big person of trying to recognize and see what God's doing around me, whether it's something that comes over the radio, whether it's a sermon that I'm hearing. I'm always trying to be in tune as to how he's moving and trying to communicate with me. And one of those ways was through sermons. I was hearing, at that time, our church was talking about Jonah and the whale and how Jonah was called to go into a city that, or to a people that he did not want to minister to. Oh, that was me. Or about going, you know, Nehemiah going and rebuilding a city. You know, so it was all these things. So as we prayed, and then I'm seeing all these signs around me, and then I said, okay, well, if we're gonna do this, then I will at least try to find a job. Sure enough, I got a job. And before you know it, in November, I'm up here, I'm starting a new job. And now, mind you, I was working part-time a little bit here and there down in Iowa. So now I'm coming up to Minnesota and working full-time, trying to fix the flooded house that my dad lived in, trying to get things ready for my family to show up. Everybody ends up getting up here by the spring of 2013. And the person that we had lined up to buy our restaurant, it ended up not working out. So then Jeff had to go back in 2014. We just sold the diner in October of 2019. So it's been 5 years. 5 years. 5 years of hard work. Single mom in it, trying to take care of my house, trying to work. At this time, I was working in a toxic environment at my old job. I ended up landing this awesome part-time job as the admin assistant here with this community in 2015. And so then I'm working two jobs. I'm working streetcar as an excellent martini and margarita maker. Also working here at the church. And I felt like I was burning my candle at both ends. But you know what? God called us here. God called me here. So I'm just going to fake it until I make it, right? I'm going to fake it until I make it. Yes, I'm here. I'm being faithful. I'm going to do what it is that Jesus told me to do. And here I go. Put on the smile because you know what? It's going to be okay. God's got this. God's got this. God's got this. And again, that undercurrent of feeling this anger, this frustration, this what in the world is going on, was present and was still there. And I was just becoming more filled with more doubt, anxiety, worry, missing my spouse because I was doing all of this all by myself. He would come home once every couple of weeks, if that. And it was really, you know what? It really stunk. I didn't like it. I didn't like it at all. Then 2018 comes along. Well, actually first, I'm gonna actually share this one. That there's this author, her name is Barbara Brown Taylor, and I love to read books, but for some reason, I am an extremely slow reader, so now I just do Audible. So I was listening to her book, it's called Learning to Walk in the Dark, and there was this quote that she had stated that was just, it just really struck me. It said, suffering comes from our reluctance to learn to walk in the dark. And how so many times we feel that we have to be in this space, in this place where it's always positive, always happy, this is how we're going. But really the reality is that God calls us into being able to walk in the dark because he wants to show us that he's present even in the hardship, even in the hardship. So I'm in the space of feeling I'm full of doubt. I'm all over the place. I'm exhausted. 2018 comes. I'm starting to feel this, okay, I think I'm supposed to do something different. So I would always look to Jeff or even Chris and Nikki and have these conversations of what should I be doing with my life? Where should I be going? And this is what I love about my community and I love about my pastors is that I can go up to them and could say, okay, Chris, tell me what it is that you think I should do. I don't know, Nita, what do you think you should do? He's not going to give me the answer. Neither is Nikki. But they're going to point me to the answer. What are you doing? Are you praying to Jesus? Are you having those conversations with him? Are you inviting him into what it is that you've got going on? That's one of the things I do love about this community. So 2018 comes along, and instead of me, I'm out here in the fringes. I'm filled with doubt. I don't know if I can do this anymore. I'm ready to just give up. My family life is totally, totally going bad. My marriage is heading south. Things with my teenagers are, well, they're teenagers. So things with my teenagers are their teenagers. And so I meet a friend at the Magnolia Cafe. And she tells me that she just got done, she was up at the Duluth Vineyard, and she just did Faith Walking. Faith Walking 101, which is the introductory two-day class that they offered up there at the church. And she's telling me how, oh, Anita, I learned about how when we are being raised by our families, how it's this thing is called our first formations, where it's not necessarily a good or a bad thing. It's just that everybody's family has a certain way and a certain system that they do. And so you learn about these first formations. And then she also was telling me about how we have a tendency to, if we have emotional things that happened in our life, we have a tendency to take that emotional thing that could be good or bad and promise ourselves a way that we're going to take care of ourselves. This is how I'm going to take care of me. Oh, somebody did this to me, so you know what? I'm never going to let that happen again. And so we make this negative vow to take care of ourselves. And then she talks about how I'm just going to sit in my negative vows for a while, and I'm going to learn how to write myself these new positive vows that they invite you into, where it's then you ask Jesus to be a part of this positive new way of peeling back the layers, and hopefully you'll receive some healing. You will, of course, if we invite Jesus into it. The minute that she said that, it's like, okay, this is what I want. This is what I need to do. This is what I need to do. So that's in April. Come June, I've got my daughter's graduation. Things are going even worse in my family and in my marriage. And then beginning of July, we go to Puerto Rico for our student ministries mission trip. Again, anything to do with church, I'm all in. I am all in. And you go on a mission trip and it's church every single day, right? I mean, we are praying for people and we are together as a community and we're singing songs and I'm loving it. And then God shows up, God shows up. He always shows up. And he is really pressing in on me, Colossians 3. Colossians 3 about how I am to seek Jesus and then set my mind on him. And so Colossians 3 reads this. If then you have been raised with Christ, seek the things that are above, where Christ is seated at the right hand of God, and set your minds on things that are above, not on the things on the earth. I just constantly felt like he was saying to me, Nita, what you need to do is seek me and then set your eyes on me. Take off the stuff that you are experiencing and carrying in with you right now, the anger, the malice, the bitterness, the wrath, whatever it is that we carry. And then he tells me this action step of putting on. I have to put on the things that he has for me. Compassion, kindness, forgiveness, love. All of it depended on me. It didn't depend on me getting an answer from my pastors or me getting an answer from my spouse. Jesus was calling me into a space and a place of change starts with you, Nita. It is all on you. So, end of July, again, just a progression of getting bad to worse with my family, and now I decide, okay, that's it. I need to go to counseling. So I started counseling in August with an amazing therapist who basically helped me identify some of these emotional things, taught me some techniques, and train me on how to take these things, not let them affect me anymore, and then put them up on a shelf so that when I think of this memory, that might be something that's, ugh, I can't take it. I now have this experience and this ability to be able to disconnect myself so that it's not going to have that emotional trigger on me anymore. Come October, faith walking starts, and they have the next two-day event. I'm all in, I'm ready, and I'm telling you that two-day event has changed my life because here I am almost 2 years later. 2 years later, and on the process, there has been Faith Walking 101, then it goes to 201, 202, and it's just, there's all these great opportunities. So I did 101, left there in October. I learned all about, again, like I talked about, our first formations. I learned how we make these promises to ourselves to protect ourselves, which ends up creating a negative vow. I learned that how to become more aware of who I am and how I treat people. I noticed how anxiety and shame comes into play in my life. I noticed how mastering my emotions is an awareness thing and that we need to be able to sit and identify how we're feeling and what it's all about. We talked about how do we want to show up in our relationships? Learn how to clean up our messes in our relationships. How we are just as much part of our relationships and making them icky as the person that we might have an issue with. How to rewrite these negative vows, turn them into something positive, and invite Jesus in along the way. And then after that, it's a progression of then developing some guiding principles by using your positive vows and then being able to daily look to those guiding principles and walk your life out in that. And that in the end, when it comes to all this work, that I'm really, 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 really worth it. I'm super worth it. So that Gideon Bible, when I was 16 and I got pregnant, and my stepdad was sitting at a table, and he was drunk, so drunk. And he was a great guy sober, great guy sober. And he sat there and he looked at me and he said, "You, here you read that Bible every day, and look at you. Look what you've done." In that moment, I told myself that I'm not going to disappoint people anymore, that I need to be successful, that I have little value or importance because of the messes that I make, that I can't trust others, especially men. And the beauty of it is that now, because of me identifying that piece, I've got myself a new storyline that, you know what, I'm going to disappoint people, but in the end, I don't disappoint God. That I have value, I have worth, and I am really important. That I can trust Jesus and I can rely on him because he's going to show me who it is that I can trust, especially when it comes to men. So over the last year and a half, 2 years, these are the really big things that I've learned about myself. I never in a million years would have thought that I was a control freak, and here I was. Trying to control things all the time. All the time. Trying to control my family, trying to control my kids, trying to control my spouse, because I was out of control. And I didn't know how to get myself in line. I've learned that I do have value and I do have worth, that no one can take that from me ever, ever. That I did not treat the ones that were closest to me the best. I was really harsh and hard on my kids and even my spouse, that I had a lot of anger. And again, it was so much easier for me to go off and do things like mission trips and these short-term quick love things because, yeah, even though you're invested, are you fully invested like you would be and have to be with your family? That my journey with Jesus is a walk and it's not a run. And so one of the things that I do is I love to run. I love running. And so I truly believe, even though I've never heard anybody say that faith walking, this experience of faith walking, I mean, that's the reason why they have the word walking in it. Because we live in a society where it's like, okay, I messed up, fix me, let's move on to the next thing. I messed up, fix me, move on to the next thing, right? This instant gratification of, okay, let's hurry up and get this thing done because I got other things that I've got to do. But God is always calling us into slowing down, finding rest, and drawing us more to him all the time. And I think that that's why it's a walk, because it takes time. It takes time. It's a journey, just like training and running for a race or doing CrossFit or anything like that. We just can't go and run 26.2 miles. We got to train for it, right? So one of my verses that I've been like really clinging to over the last 7 years comes out of Hebrews 12, 1 through 3. And prior to that, in chapter 11, the author points to, he's talking about faith and he's pointing to all these amazing men and women throughout history that did all these things that are in the Bible, whether it was Moses or Abel or Abraham, Noah, he always is pointing to these people. And so Hebrews 12, 1 through 3, it reads this. Do you see what this means? All these pioneers who blazed the way. All these veterans cheering us on. It means we'd better get on with it. Strip down, start running, never quit. No extra spiritual fat, no parasitic sins. Keep your eyes on Jesus, who both began and finished this race we're in. Study how he did it, because he never lost sight of where he was headed. That exhilarating finish in and with God. He could put up with anything along the way, cross, shame, whatever. And now he is there in the place of honor, right alongside God. When you find yourselves flagging in your faith, go over that story again, item by item, that long litany of hostility he plowed through. That will shoot adrenaline into your souls. I got one more thing. Bob Goff, excellent author. And right now I'm doing a devotion, Live Well, Walk in Love. And in his devotion, there was something that just really hit home for me. And it says this, that God is bigger than the mountain where you're lost. And he exists off the trail and off the map. Life is an adventure he's invited us on, not a business trip. He's not out to destroy our dreams. He only wants to make us more like him. God uses uncertainty to remodel our hearts. Don't waste your time looking for a way out of the difficulty you're in. Look for him in the midst of it. He's not the destination we're aiming for. He's the guide along the way. If you are currently feeling like you're walking in darkness, he is present with you in it. got a couple of things that I just want to ask you before we wrap up. And before and as we wrap up, when I'm all done and we're praying, ministry team will come up, and then we will also be offering prayer ministry after. And don't forget that we have our communion tables that are set up too, so we invite you into taking that as well. But there's just two things that I really want to ask you today. Where do you feel stuck? Is it in your job? Is it in a relationship that's not moving forward? Is it your walk with Jesus? Where do you feel stuck? Or what might be stopping you from pressing into who it is that you might want to be? Is there fear in it? Is there some storyline that's repeating over and over and over again in your head? Would you stand with me and we'll pray? Jesus, I thank you so much for this community. And I know that you love each and every person that is here today. I know that more than anything, you want to bring healing and hope to these people. So God, just bring this healing and may they be filled with hope, that confident expectation that you do have really good things for them. Amen.